During the first part of the show today, we're going to be speaking with Mark Kurlansky about his new book, Salmon, A Fish, the Earth, and the History of Their Common Fate. You may know Mark's other writing from books like Cod or Salt or Paper, but today we'll be focusing on salmon. So, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, let's start with this. You know, you talk about salmon in this book in a really like poetic way, and kind of how magnificent this species is. So let's start with that. Tell us about salmon.
Yeah, well, salmon really is one of the most incredible animals in the kingdom. I mean, it can jump 11 feet in the air, which, you know, for its size would be, I don't know, like a human being jumping 50 feet in the air or something. It accelerates faster than an automobile. Although I was saying that somebody recently said, objected that Tesla is faster than a salmon. But I don't know. It has this remarkable life story in which it's born in a river and grows to be about the size of a herring, goes out to sea and gains 95% of its size out at sea, and swims thousands of miles away, and then somehow finds its way back to the river where it was born. And not only does it find the river it was born, but it then finds the exact spot in that river where it was born. And once it enters the river, it doesn't eat ever again, which is this one of these brilliant aspects of nature, because salmon are such voracious eaters at sea. If they continue that in the river, they would just clean out the river. So they stop eating and live on just the fat and the protein that they enter the river with, and face incredible obstacles to get back to this point of their birth, leaping over waterfalls and in some cases dams, and swimming upstream against powerful currents, and just unstoppable. There's nothing stops the salmon. If they leap on a waterfall and don't make it to the top and fall down to the bottom, they try again and again and again. They're just relentless. And when they arrive at the place of their birth to spawn, they only have enough energy left to do that, to spawn, and then they roll over and die.
So they also have a pretty impressive geographic range, or historically they did, right?
Yeah. I mean, man has actually kind of expanded their range, but the natural range of salmon is entirely in the northern hemisphere, in the upper, colder part of the northern hemisphere, all the way around the globe. So, you know, North America and Iceland and Scotland and Scandinavia and Russia and northern Japan and all northern places. Now, some people have successfully planted salmon in places in the southern hemisphere, like New Zealand and Australia and South Africa and Chile and Argentina, but that's not natural.
I think in the United States, we often, when we hear salmon, we associate it with maybe the Pacific Northwest or Alaska. But, you know, you talk in your book about how there used to be salmon runs throughout New England as well, right?
Oh. Yeah. I mean, the Connecticut River, which I was born next to, was one of the great salmon rivers of North America. But growing up by the Connecticut River, I never heard that fact mentioned, nor did I ever see a salmon, or it wasn't served in restaurants, it wasn't part of the culture, just completely forgotten. But it had been one of the great salmon rivers.
Right.
And all of New England used to have great salmon runs, and Maritime Canada and up into Newfoundland still do.
And what happened to reduce those populations?
Well, this is an interesting thing. I mean, I kind of follow the history of salmon all over the world, going back to ancient times, and you know, you see these things recurring, and there used to be a lot of talk about not blocking rivers and dams and nets across rivers, and I mean, in ancient times and in medieval times, the Magna Carta states that the King of England can't block a salmon river. The Industrial Revolution really did it in. And in England, they built factories powered by water power from dams, so they blocked rivers, and then these factories dumped pollution into the rivers and effectively just killed the rivers of the UK. And then British people in New England did the exact same thing in New England. And then, you know, who was it but New Englanders who went to the Pacific Northwest with this bright idea of hydroelectric power to build the economy of the Pacific Northwest? So I was researching all of this, and I was thinking, well, why don't they ever learn anything?
Right.
And then I realized it was like a revelation to me, because they're not trying to learn anything. They're doing it on purpose. It's what they want to do, and they consider it a success. I mean, they made England the greatest industrial power of the Industrial Revolution, and New England became the great industrial center of North America. And they took the Pacific Northwest, which had very little economic activity, and turned it into an economic powerhouse with the largest electrical production of any place in North America. And these were all deemed great success stories. So I started realizing that what's wrong here is our whole concept of economic development. Our concept of economic development is unsustainable. It is going to destroy the earth, and we have to find ways of developing economies that aren't destructive. It calls for a complete rethinking of everything.
In the book, you also kind of highlight some fisheries that have been fished sustainably for, you know, for decades or even for centuries, I guess. And you introduce this concept of maximum sustainable yield. So how is it that we can fish for millions of pounds of salmon and still have a healthy fishery there?
Okay, I see in this two questions, so I'll give you two answers.
Perfect.
The salmon fisheries are actually relatively easy to regulate and fish sustainably, because salmon are a very predictable fish. We know what they're doing and where they're doing it at all times. And what you have to do is monitor the amount of salmon that go into the river to spawn. And when enough salmon are spawning, then the leftover ones in the ocean can be taken without making any dent in the population. And you can do this very easily with spotter aircraft or viewing towers. You see the fish entering the river. So this can be done, and most of the wild salmon that's available today is fished sustainably. Now, there's another issue hidden in there, and that is the fact that when European Americans came to North America, there were lots of people already there who lived off of salmon and fished it very sustainably. And this kind of perplexed the white people, because, you know, it was a basic premise that we're smarter than they are, so how come they can do this better than we can? And they came up with two explanations, which are still commonly held to. And one was that the natives did not have the fishing skills to overfish, and that they were not fishing as a commercial commodity, but simply to feed themselves. Both of these things are completely wrong. They built villages, and they traded between villages, and they were tremendously commercial people, and salmon was one of their primary commodities of trade. Also, they were extremely skilled fishermen, so that if you read the journals of Lewis and Clark or Mackenzie or any of the early explorers, you find that if they needed salmon, if they needed something to eat, they had to contact the Indians to get them some salmon because they didn't know how to do it, and the native people were great at doing this. So why was their fishing sustainable? Because their fundamental concept of economic development was that you can't damage the habitat. And as long as you don't damage the habitat, in other words, take care of the rivers, it will be sustainable.
Right. So they followed along that, but colonists did not. And now we have, like you say, large expanses of our geography that are absence of salmon. What does the role that salmon play, or what is the role that salmon play in ecosystems in general? What happens if the salmon goes away? Why is that a big deal?
Yeah, it's a calamity. Okay. I mean, there's the original concept that Darwin wrote about, that anytime you lose a species that threatens the survival of other species, what became known in the 1980s as biodiversity, although Darwin never used that term, the idea that you have to have lots of species to have a successful ecosystem. And every time you lose a species, you are endangering other species. Okay, so that's a basic premise. However, all species aren't equal. And salmon is an example of a species that is unusually important to other species.
Right.
It's important to the survival of a large number of mammals, including bears and seals, and it's important to many birds, and it's important to the life of rivers. And when salmon die in the river, they enrich the river. So that if you didn't have salmon, salmon rivers basically will have lost their survival system. And that includes all of the animals that live off the river.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Mark Kurlansky. He's the author of the new book, Salmon, A Fish, the Earth, and the History of Their Common Fate. So, Mark, one thing we wanted to take some time to talk about was the fact that the problem is you know, I guess the risks facing salmon, it's much bigger than overfishing. But we often tend to talk about overfishing and point to overfishing when we hear about, you know, a fishery collapsing. So let's dig into that a little bit. What are the issues that you're seeing, you know, of course, in addition to the potential overfishing?
Yeah, you know, in the age in which we live, if there is a fishery, I don't know that there is one, but if there's a fishery whose only problem is overfishing, that would be just a wonderfully simple problem. that's really not the way it goes anymore, which is why, you know, there are so many fish that have been, their fishing has been severely curtailed, and still the stock is diminished. Salmon is an extreme case of this. There's almost no commercial fishing of Atlantic salmon, and yet the stock in most places is getting smaller and smaller. Among the many other things that happen to salmon are pollution, bad farming practices, pesticide, deforestation, particularly riverbanks, urban sprawl, building along rivers, and climate change, and climate change, and climate change. Climate change is devastating to all fish, but particularly to salmon. Obviously, a fish that cannot live in water that is warmer than 68 degrees is going to be threatened by the Earth warming up. Carbon dioxide happens to love water, and something like a third of all the carbon dioxide produced on land ends up in the ocean. And when it is in the ocean, it decreases hydrogen, and it creates a different atmosphere, a different environment, in which it is very difficult for a lot of organisms to grow. So zooplankton doesn't grow nearly as much as it used to. Certain fish, that large fish like salmon and cod depend on, like capelin, don't grow as large as they used to. And what's happening is that salmon go to sea and they can't find enough to eat. And that's why a lot of them never make it back to spawn. The ocean is losing its carrying capacity. It's losing its ability to feed the animals that live in it. This, in, I don't know, 40 years or however long I've been doing this, is just the most frightening thing I've ever learned. I mean, if the ocean can no longer feed marine animals, then we're sunk. So this cannot continue.
You said if salmon doesn't survive, there's little hope for the survival of the planet, which is a huge statement.
Right, or you could look at it the other way around, which is all we have to do to save the salmon is save the planet.
I like that.
Which one is easier? Yeah.
It's a good sentiment.
Sure.
So it's safe to say this is a very keystone species to our survival.
Yes.
All animals and ecological survival. Unlike the book you wrote about cod, which, real briefly, you know, when I read it, seemed to be more of about an overfishing issue. Would I be correct?
Yes, and that has something to do with why I wrote this book.
Yeah.
Because at the time I wrote cod, it came out in 1997, and the cod, the northern stocks and the Grand Banks had just collapsed, and the general public was for the first time thinking about overfishing and the problems of regulating fisheries. I mean, actually, fishermen had been thinking about it for a long time. I worked on commercial fishing boats in the 1960s, and it's all fishermen talked about.
Yeah.
But now it was becoming something that the general public was aware of. And now when people look at a problem with fishing, they immediately turn to overfishing. So that when I told people I was working on a book on salmon, people would say, oh, the overfishing. It's not the overfishing. And so I wanted to write a book in which people could see all the other problems. And I thought salmon was the perfect example of that.
Yeah. So what about farming of salmon, right? Fish farming in general. I know this is a pretty tricky topic, right? Can this play a role in helping with, you know, our salmon populations, or is this across the board kind of something we should avoid?
This is a complicated thing. I've actually somewhat changed my point of view on this. When I was writing cod, I was completely against fish farming. And the reason I was against it was that farmed fish were being fed wild fish, and a lot of it was just being scooped up in these factory trawlers, horrible fishing practices. And, you know, when you ate a farmed fish, more wild fish had died for it than if you just ate a wild fish. The people who do fish farming are aware of all their sins and not very happy about them, and are genuinely trying to correct them with varying degrees of success. And this is one of the things that they take on. And now fish meal is only about 50% fish, and there's a lot of very high-tech science going into finding other kinds of protein sources to feed farmed fish. But there are many other problems, including the fact that if you have, you know, a pen with 200,000 salmon, and you have, you know, a few of them, so you have like a million salmon in one spot, this is going to attract a lot of sea lice. You know, it's like if you leave food out and you get ants, and then, you know, the sea lice, which is a very tiny crustacean, feeds on salmon, and it starts feeding on the wild ones, too. There's also the problem of salmon escaping. And if they're usually Atlantic salmon, even in the Pacific, and if they are in the Pacific, they're not going to mate with Pacific salmon, because it's a hard, fast rule of biology that animals that are in a different genus can't mate. But in the Atlantic, they're the same genus and they do mate. And then the wild salmon start taking on the characteristics of the farm salmon, which are not great. You know, when we start farming, when we start domesticating animals, like, you know, cows or pigs or anything, natural selection is out the window and we get human selection, you know, things are bred for what we want. And these salmon are bred mainly to grow fast. And they have no survival skills because they don't need them. So they're just a fast-growing, dumb animal that is now crossbreeding with wild animals with disastrous effect. As I say, fish farmers recognize these problems and are trying to deal with them. And I think that the really smart approach to this is to keep pressuring them to deal with these problems rather than, you know, saying the whole thing should be banned, because what they started out to do is a good idea. They started out to produce a inexpensive protein from the ocean, so it doesn't take up any land, and it doesn't use up energy. It just uses the energy of the ocean. So they thought they had a great environmental idea, and they're kind of upset to discover that they don't.
Well, as we look to the future, you know, what are the things that we can do to kind of help protect these salmon? And I want to ask if there are any specific examples of, you know, restoration of salmons to rivers.
Maybe what countries are doing it properly or employing proper management.
Well, management is greatly improved in most places. You know, including in the North Atlantic, they don't even have commercial fishing anymore. You know, one of the big things to deal with is dams that are blocking rivers. And there is a movement to tear down dams, and a number of dams have been turned down, and there has been quite a few signs of success in places where they have. But it's difficult to do because it's extremely expensive, and only a small part of the expense is actually tearing down the dam. After you tear down the dam, you have to put the river back the way it was. So these are huge, expensive projects, but they have met with some success. They're also cleaning up rivers, you know, in the rivers of Britain that were disastrously polluted have been remarkably cleaned up, and salmon have returned to a lot of these rivers, even the Thames.
Wow.
And actually a few salmon have been sighted in the Seine in Paris. Not in Paris, but, you know, that Seine.
Hey, maybe soon they'll be sighted in the Venetian canals, Mark. That's the water's clearing up there, too. But that's encouraging.
Well, you have to clear it up in a place that's, you know, that's a salmon habitat.
Exactly.
But, you know, rebuilding the habitat is the key to the whole thing. There was a time when people thought that, you know, all you have to do is create a bunch of fish in a hatchery and put them in the river and you'll be doing great. But, you know, there's a reason why the salmon who were there disappeared. And if you don't fix that problem, it does no good to put more in.
So, Mark, as you think about kind of the current plight of the salmon, I guess, are you hopeful for the future of the species?
Or hopeful for the future of the planet?
And the planet, right?
You know, questions like that are a matter of temperament. You know, I tend to be an optimistic person and only see hope. You could frame an argument that it's all hopeless. But to be honest, I just don't choose to see it that way.
Right, right. Well, I think it goes back to what you're saying, that the Native Americans, the First Nations, had what I call respect, restraint, and reverence for the salmon and for ecology in general. And that was something that was lost and something that maybe we need to get back.
I mean, the Native American saw this as an incredible gift.
Right.
That these salmon came back year after year. And in some cases, they thought, well, they kill them and still they come back, you know? And you had to take care of the salmon. You had to take care of their river. And there were all sorts of rules about what you could and couldn't do in the river. Mm-hmm. Certain metals you couldn't put in the river because salmon didn't like those metals. And you had to preserve the habitat that the animals lived in. I think that slowly humans in general are beginning to understand this. There's been a lot of research. For example, people in Oregon, according to polls, acknowledge that it's more important to preserve salmon than develop economic activity on the Columbia River.
Wow.
I think we're beginning to see this.
Right. Well, I agree with you, and I see the value. I think more communities are seeing the value of this, of the fish being of coming back from an economic point of view, from say recreational aspects of it, to go fishing. Look, my first experience.
Well, this is the thing that fascinates me, because you know, I started off as a teenager working on commercial fishing boats, and know commercial fishermen well, and commercial fishermen have always claimed that there was a conspiracy that, you know, sports fishermen were trying to take over. And in some cases, this isn't true. Like, you know, I was hearing this a lot about cod, and it's not true about cod, because cod isn't a good sport fish. No. They aren't that much fun to catch. But it is true about salmon. And what has been discovered all over the salmon world is that there's more money in maintaining catch and release sports fishing than in having commercial fishing.
Right.
Wow.
That's a good point. My first image of salmon growing up in New Jersey was watching Ted Williams catch him on the American Sportsman. He was up in Maine, right? Fishing.
Yes, I remember this, but that's because I'm a Red Sox fan.
All right, we'll end it there, Mark.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about your new book, Salmon, A Fish, the Earth, and the History of Their Common Fate. This was just released on March 3rd by Patagonia. And I have to say, it's a gorgeous book, and it's great reading, and it's peppered with recipes. I love that you included recipes.
Well, I can't help myself here.
thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you.
All right.